Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from Roaring Gap in the mountains of North Carolina, sitting in for Jim Hart this evening. Well, welcome to the EAL Radio Show. Wow. 251 of these broadcasts in the archive. Hard to believe we've been talking about Eastern Airlines now in our sixth year, but we have. And you've been a great part of why we're around this long. In the early years, there were some that said that we wouldn't make it for 1 year. Well, we proved that wrong. Neil has mentioned that our little radio show is kitchen table radio. Perhaps it does sound a little homespun with the lack of all the sophisticated radio equipment the big guys have, but it seems to be working. I think the biggest reason is the subject we cover, Eastern Airlines. And it's the real reason that it is so, that it's this popular. Eastern has always been an airline of first, and the radio show is carrying on that tradition, as we're sure that the new Eastern will continue to do so. With each show that goes into our radio broadcast archives, it tells us, your host, that Eastern people enjoy talking and hearing of the old Eastern and the new, as we like to think of our beloved Eastern Airlines. Now, we hope that you will participate and board our plane, a beautiful Boeing 737-800, smartly painted in the familiar paint livery of the old Eastern, every Monday at this time, and be part of our show. For those listening to the broadcast on your computers, all you need to do is to call us at 213-816-1611, and we'll put you on Neil's producer board. He can then open your mic, your telephone, and you can tell us what's on your mind, or you might want to add to the subject being discussed. Now remember, unless Neil has opened your phone connection to join the live conversation, you'll need to press the number 1 on your phone's keypad to join in. Those who cannot connect to listen in on a computer can still hear and participate by just calling the number you just heard, area code 213-816-1611. Also, keep in mind that your telephone microphone picks up any noises that might be in the background, so make sure that you mute your phone or keep as quiet as possible during the broadcast. Now, Chuck, how about getting flight 251 underway, please?
Chuck?
Well, Chuck, I think Chuck must have disappeared.
Chuck's stuck in traffic.
Yeah, he might have been, but...
I'm still here.
Well, how about saying something here? We're going to get flight 251 underway.
Thank you, and welcome aboard. We've had our senior flight attendant get you seated and come back to you once you get the plane started and rolling down the runway. As a technical supervisor, I've found no maintenance items, and the aircraft is ready for our flight today. Captain Neil, how about putting flight 251 in the air?
Thanks, Chuck, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're all set. Our passengers are seated. Our flight attendants have completed their briefing and seated with their seatbelts on. And we've got both CFM 56-7B turbofan engines running. And so let's spool them up and blast into the beautiful South Florida skies.
Flight 250, whenever you're ready, you're cleared for takeoff.
Roger that, Miami Tower. And today we're flight 251, and we're cleared to go. Okay, we're spooling up, and here we go down the runway. I hope we can get this thing rotated.
Yeah, me too.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, tonight we have no single topic except Eastern Airlines, of course. So, folks, we would like to talk about anything that's on your mind tonight. The new Eastern, the old Eastern, and various Eastern employee associations and plans for 2016 or and any other topic you'd like to share.
Jim, Captain Neal mentioned the Boeing 737-800 engines. I'd like to tell you folks about this engine. It's called a CFM56-7B engine, and it carries on the CFM tradition of providing customers with a state-of-the-art engine that enables them to remain competitive in a tough international market. The CFM56-7Bs was originally developed to provide next-generation 737 operators with a higher thrust, improved efficiency, lower maintenance costs than its predecessor, the CFM56-3. Since entering service in 1994, the CFM56-7B is delivering on the promise that while providing industry-leading reliability, the engine has been able to achieve outstanding rates in very demanding circumstances. For example, Southwest Airlines 737 had one of the highest utilization rates of the fleet and typically accumulated 6 to 7 flights each day. This reliability made the CFM56-7B powered the 737, the first aircraft in its class, to be granted 180 minutes extension range twin engine operation, ETOPS, approved by the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration. The ETOPS is defined as the number of minutes flying time from a suitable airport with a twin-engine aircraft that may operate in the event that one engine becomes inoperable. The approval gives operating airlines far greater route scheduling flexibility. In 2007, the CFM breathed new life into the CFM56-7B fleet by introducing the technical insertion production standard compared to the base CFM56-7B. This new configuration provides operators up to 1% better specific fuel consumption over the engine's life cycle and between 5 and 15% lower maintenance costs, depending on the thrust rating. Although enhanced durability, the engine also meets current International Civilian Aviation Organization, which is ICAO or CAEP/6 environmental standards. And now the CFM is preparing for the mid-2011 entry into service of another upgrade, the CFM56-7BE engine. The enhanced CFM56-7BE powered next-generation 737 airplanes, engine combinations that will provide a 2% improvement in fuel consumption, which in turn evaluates into a 2% reduction in the carbon emissions. In addition, the 7BE will provide up to 4% lower maintenance costs depending on the thrust rating. For sure, it's a new engine named for the aircraft that has been flown under the Eastern banner. We wish it very much success. Would anyone care to name a few of the old aircraft-powered plants Eastern used? Hint, there are a few, and you can identify the aircraft powered by the engines.
Chuck, you know, Eastern, since Pitcairn, has had many airplanes, and Don Gagnon has made a list of those airplanes, and perhaps we'll get around to them in just a few minutes. But our show tonight is to just tell you the different power plants and just not technical information about them, like Chuck just told us about the CMF engine for the 737 that the new generation Eastern is using. But starting back in 1928, when we had the Pitcairn Mayo Wing, it was powered, for instance, with a 220-horsepower Wright Cyclone engine. The Wright engines have been around for a long, long time. And with Pitcairn, the Mayo Wing, which was so successful in the early days of the Eastern Air Transport, and before that, Pitcairn, put Eastern on the map, and that airplane and that engine was introduced in May of 1928. And by the way, the Pitcairn Mayo Wing, if you've been to the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C., one of two Eastern airplanes that are hanging from the ceilings at the Smithsonian, the Pitcairn Mayo Wing and, of course, the DC-3. Does anyone know the 440-horsepower Wright Whirlwind engine, what airplane that was on, powered? Well, no answers there, so let's just call it the Curtis Kingbird, which came around in 1930. Now, keep in mind, a lot of the first generation airplanes for Eastern Airlines were fabric airplanes, had metal cowlings, but the basic fuselage was metal, was fabric, and the wings and the ailerons and the tail section of the airplane. Then they increased that Curtis Conqueror engine, which was 1,200 horsepower, and that was on the Curtis Condor. Here's one that's a very interesting 450 horsepower Pratt & Whitney WASP engine. Anyone like to guess which airplane that was on? Here's a hint.
It was on a crop duster.
Well, it was on a crop duster, yeah, but here's a hint that Eastern had, the Electra L-10. Do you remember who flew that airplane, the L-10?
Lindbergh.
No.
Oh, and the girl tried to go around the world.
That's right, the Electra. Lockheed Electra, flown by Amelia Earhart. Yeah, that was one of Eastern's passenger airplanes. Matter of fact, the history says that when they sold their last Electra, Eastern sold the last Electra, that's the day that Amelia Earhart took off on her around-the-world flight. We've got a 1,200-horsepower double WASP engine, which was on one of our most famous aircraft. Anyone guess which airplane that was on?
A DC-3?
The 1,200-horsepower double WASP?
DC,
you said something. Guess the rest of it. DC what, Steve?
DC-3?
DC-3. Sure was. 1944. We took that onto the property and started operating that for many years. Very successful aircraft. Now, here's one that you may have never heard of, a 245-horsepower Jacobs L4MA engine. A Jacobs engine? They're on the Cessna 195s, and they call those engines the Shaky Jakes. But on the Eastern airplane, wasn't really an airplane that that engine was on. It was on the KD-1B autogyro. Anyone remember the autogyro and how that was operated?
That had like a propeller that went like a helicopter, but had another engine that pushed it.
Push, That's right, out of pusher. And then the wings were the rotor blades, and they flew that airplane off of the rooftops of buildings in New York City to the main post office so that it could be the mail could arrive and be shipped sent out on rail. And one captain, very famous captain with Eastern, Captain Johnny Miller, flew that airplane, and he had another guy that was flying with him, just the two pilots, flew those autogyros for Eastern, and Eastern had the very first autogyro operation of any airline. Didn't last long, lasted only about a year, and then they discontinued that operation. Then there's the 2,000-horsepower Pratt & Whitney engine, which was mounted on what airplane, do you recall? 2,000, it was, and we didn't use this in passenger service, but it was a Curtiss C-46. Most of the time that airplane was on the Eastern property was during the war, World War II, that they used that, and it was contracted to fly for the military. Eastern had that C-46. I have another one, 2,700 horsepower, which was the Wright 975 C-18 engine on the Lockheed 1049 Super Constellation, Super Connie. I'm trying to think about what the designation of C-18 stands for. Now, I do know the designation that this next engine is called. It's 3,250 horsepower, and it's a Wright engine that is designated a 975 TC-18 engine, and it was on which airplane? Anyone? Okay, it was the Super G, Connie. We had the Super Constellation, and we had the Super G. And the engine, this engine, 975 TC, had a turbo compound engine, and it was designated TC-18 engine. Wonderful airplane, great engine, and these were 3350 engines. On the DC-7B, what type of engine would you think was on the DC-7B? Anyone?
3350.
3350, yep, exactly. And it wound up 3,250 horsepower. So four of those carried a pretty good weight in the DC-7, and it was a fine airplane while Eastern had it. Then we had this new engine. It was a 4,050 equivalent horsepower Allison 501 D-13 engine. Now it
Lockheed Electra.
Lockheed Electra. It wasn't expressed as horsepower as we know it because it wasn't measuring horsepower. It was measuring thrust and the power produced by those big prop blades, Hamilton standards that were on the Electra aircraft, the L-188 Electra, Lockheed Electra, which was successful with Eastern passengers on short-length routes and also on the shuttle. It operated many years on the shuttle. Steve, did you fly that on the shuttle?
Oh, yes. I really felt like that was the easiest and the best airplane that I ever flew. You felt like that you could do absolutely anything with it. And I tried several things that I shouldn't have.
Well, one thing I remember about it is I think you could land that airplane on an aircraft carrier.
Mm-hmm.
It would stop on a dime.
Yes.
When you threw those Hamilton standards big engines in reverse, boy, I tell you what, that airplane would stop right now. Almost
yes.
As good as the 757, but that's my favorite, and that airplane had a great operation.
A little ice war story with that about that airplane. We were it's on a shuttle, and we were going into LaGuardia, and all runways are covered with a measurable amount of snow and ice. and all the 727s were orbiting around waiting for the runways to be cleared. And old Steve said, well, we can go ahead and land now. And the wind was right out of the northwest, right down runway 31, pretty strong. And that runway was closed because they were clearing it off. But runway 4 was open. And, of course, you got a direct left crosswind on a runway that has not been cleared of snow and ice, breaking action Neil. But old Steve says, okay, nah, we can do it. We're an Electra. We can make that thing. So we land. And the runway, the airplane starts sliding off on the ice, and none of the asymmetrical thrust or the braking will stop me. So now the runway lights on the right-hand side loom big with that prop turning out there, the number 4 prop. And the only thing we could do then is pull a handle and feather it to keep it from chewing up some runway lights. Got it stopped just with that prop over the runway lights, and it was not chewing up the runway lights. But that was one of Steve's big times as he called on guardian angels, and I should have stayed home instead of landing that airplane.
Okay, well, that's a good story about the Electra. There are so many of them about that airplane. It's such a great airplane, and it was great in the passenger section back there because it had that little lounge, as you recall, that little wraparound sofa in the back of the airplane.
Who was the captain who retired on the Electra? He used to fly the shuttle all the time. I don't recall his name.
Anybody? Well, let's
this
see.
This was well after the jets came on the property, and but he stayed on the Electra, and all he ever flew, because the only flight it was on was the shuttle, and I believe that he retired on the shuttle, but I can't recall his name.
Well, it might pop into our mind before the end of the show, but I'll tell you, that was one airplane that some of the pilots couldn't check out on, simply because of that gearbox reduction for the jet engine and the prop, and they just could not understand how that gearbox would run those props at a constant speed. As you recall, anyone recall the speed, the RPM of those props? I think it was 1,080 revolutions per minute. 1,080.
That sounds right.
Well, it was a 1,080 prop, and it would maintain that speed, and you would change your pitch to get whatever you wanted to out of it. And a remarkable airplane, great engine, those Allison engines, and that stayed around, I don't know how many years, until we came into the pure jet engine. Does anyone recall the Eastern airplane that first had a jet engine that was on the property that we purchased? What was the first jet aircraft that we purchased?
Had to be a 727.
Yes.
You think that, but it wasn't.
The 720.
Absolutely.
The 89.
Who said 720, Frank?
No, I said 89.
Okay, Don. Okay, it was a 720. Was the first jet that we brought onto the property, and then after that, we had the 727 that arrived in 19. Anyone want to give me the date? Well, I can
64?
Remember the date.
Part of the paper.
1964. Did you say that, Chuck? Yeah, that's right. 1964. Eastern was the first operator of the Boeing 727 with the great engine, the JT8D Pratt & Whitney engine. So P&W are still powering some of the airplanes, And I think it was probably used on most of the Eastern airplanes as far as the jets were concerned, and the props as well. But the JT8D engine was used on the Boeing 727-100 series. In the 100 series, of course, we had the 200 series, and I didn't do the research on that engine, but it was a JT8D dash, I'm not sure, 13, I want to say 13. But anyone help me out on that, I'd appreciate it. Okay, well, let's move on up in pound thrust, because we're talking about 14,000 pound thrust for the 727, three engines. So three times 14,000 is the total thrust of the Boeing 727 Pratt & Whitney engines. And then we
just let you know, 1 pound of thrust is one and, I believe, what, 1.5 horsepower?
Well, you can figure that one out. I think you're right. The 18,000 pound thrust JTD-3B engine was on Pratt & Whitney, was on the DC-8 aircraft, 61 and 63 series. And did any of you guys fly the DC-8 that are listening? Nope. Okay. Well, let's go on to the higher thrust engines, which is the JT-9D Pratt & Whitney engine, which produced 43,500 pounds of thrust. Does anyone know what airplane that was on? 43,500 pounds of thrust.
747.
747. Four big 43,500-pound engines, thrust engines, and the 747. How many did we have? Of course, they were leased aircraft. They were not owned by Eastern. Leased aircraft. But, Don, do you remember how many we had that we operated?
On the 747, we leased three of those.
There were three.
American.
Yeah, three of them. Okay.
Yeah,
and
they Pan American.
And they primarily flew which routes?
I don't have that on here. I don't know.
I think they flew San Juan, didn't they?
That's right. I was going to say that, George. Thank you. My New York, San Juan.
They also flew out of Miami.
Yeah, in Miami, San Juan. But
we used to fly the Dolphins football team to some of the cities they were playing in also in the 7-4.
Okay, the Dolphins. Okay, very good. Well, let's go on up and let's see. Well, we got another engine here that's producing 42,500 pounds of thrust, and it was called a Rolls-Royce RB211 engine. Anyone know which airplane that was on?
L-1011.
Everybody knows that.
Everybody knows that one. And the engine was a great engine, but we had some mechanical problems, some mechanical issues that we've talked about in the past of that RB211 engine. And I think Mr. Floyd Hall was responsible for bringing that airplane onto the property. And as a matter of fact, it turned out to be a pretty darn good airplane. I enjoyed flying it. I think I accumulated about almost 3,000 hours in that airplane. And a wonderful airplane.
The mechanics liked it. Worked on it all the time.
Passengers love that airplane. Yeah. Yeah. You got a lot of overtime pay for that, right, Chuck?
Yes, we did.
Any other kind words about the TriStar?
Like you said, it was a nice flying airplane.
Passengers loved it. Okay, let's see. Let's increase the horsepower up here, or the pound thrust of a General Electric engine that produced 51,000 pounds of thrust. Anyone know what airplane that was hung on?
It's got to be the A300.
A300B4 aircraft, right. So that was the biggest engine that we used with Eastern, the old Eastern. And we have another aircraft that had a 38,000-pound thrust Rolls-Royce engine. We had two airplanes flying the Rolls-Royce RB211 engines, but this was a -535 engine. Anyone care to say what
was
that
was? DC-10?
757, exactly, 75. And when you stop to think of a 38,000-pound thrust engine, two of them, on an airplane that's only 10 feet longer than the 727, I think it was 20 feet longer, with the 727 fuselage diameter, and you strap two 38,000-pound engines on it, and my golly, that thing was almost a fighter.
It was.
And it just had all sorts of power. Lots of stories about that airplane when it first came out, and I had the fortune of flying that for several hundreds of hours. And
Donald Trump has that airplane now, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Trump?
Donald Trump has that airplane.
Right. Yeah, did you see?
He flies
around
in that.
Did you see the interior that was on Yahoo?
I bet it was something.
Yeah, he looks like. He looks like he ought to be a sheik in Saudi Arabia. Everything is gold in that airplane. So,
I guess he can afford it, right?
I guess he can, yeah. Now, Don, did I leave any airplanes out or any engines? Yeah, I left several engines out. But,
how about the Martin 404?
Okay, thanks, Frank. Martin 404. What's in that? What was on that airplane, Frank?
Oh, I don't remember the engine, but we didn't like the airplane because we couldn't put a full load on it because of not enough power.
Really? Now,
really?
Okay, Steve, let you and I jump in here on that one. Because, Steve, I think you flew the 404, did you not?
And the Convair.
And
same
the
engine.
Convair. Okay, in your opinion, which was the better of the two?
Airplanes?
Yeah.
I think the Convair was my preference.
Mine too. I didn't fly the 404, but I heard many, many stories about it, those pilots flying it. And like Frank said, you put a load of people on it, and it just, I don't know, maybe it was designed aerodynamically. But the Convair having the same engine, but the Convair had a water injection engine. You remember the CB engines, Steve, on that Convair?
Yes.
I don't
yes.
think the Martin did. The Martin have that on there?
I don't think it did. No.
They were called dry engines as opposed to wet engines, and the wet engine part came about by on takeoff, so you can get the airplane in the air with a good load. You could push the props up and the pressures up by increasing the power. And, of course, when you did that, the cylinder heads would run hot. And so they got the idea that if we inject water into this thing, we could keep it cool and get the maximum rated power out of those engines. I don't know whether I'm saying that right or wrong, but it sounded good to me.
You're right.
The Convair was a great airplane, and it held about, 44 people on it, best I can recall. And the Martin, I think, held about the same number of people. But that
4-0.
Huh?
4-0 on the Martin.
40 people on the Martin. Okay.
Right.
That's if we didn't have to hold load seats.
Okay. And so many times did you get out of LaGuardia many times with a full load on it?
No, not many. If you were going to maybe Philadelphia, but we tried to operate it to Washington, and that was really taxing us with the weight. And, you know, the rumor at the time was that they were going to replace the engines with turboprops.
Okay,
nobody
well.
Nobody commented on that.
Not on the Martin aircraft?
Yeah,
the...
that's right. They were going to change the engines and put turboprops on them.
It never happened. Well, it didn't happen, but it did on the Convair.
Yeah.
Because the Convair switched over, the 580, Convair 580 was a turboprop engine.
We never had Convairs at LaGuardia that I can remember.
I think Allegheny flew them.
Yeah, we had Convairs going into LaGuardia. I flew many a flight in there, and Steve, you did too, on the 440s. But
I don't remember that.
Yeah, the 580s, we never flew 580s into LaGuardia. We never had 580s.
Right.
The only ones that we had, Don, the two that you mentioned on your list are which ones?
So the ones I have are the Martin 404, 1951 to 1962. We had 60 of them in operation. The Douglas DC-4, which hasn't been mentioned, 1946 to 1960, we had 38 of those. I show the Convair 340 as only having two, and the 440, I don't know how many we had.
We had 40 of them,
I believe. What was the Metropolitan?
Yeah, the Metropolitan, I don't recall that one. Tell me about that airplane.
It's on my list, and it was 57 to 1970. We had 20 of them. That might have been a commuter airplane, though.
Yeah.
Now, that was the...
That was the Convair.
That was the Convair.
Oh, was it really? Okay.
And
yes.
They call it the Metropolitan.
That's
yes.
Right.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Okay. We had a Sabreliner, would you believe, at one time. Steve, do you remember Eastern owning a Sabreliner?
I sure do. And I was jealous because I wanted to fly it. but I wasn't politically correct.
There you go. And a good friend of both of ours, Aubrey Sweezy, was the captain on that. I think he was the first captain that checked out in the North American Sabreliner. Had four engines. It was a business jet. It had four engines, two on both sides in the tail section. So when you would see two engines on a 727 mounted in the back, in this case you had two mounted on the right side, two on the left side. Don't know what make or model or size or thrust on them, but we did have the Sabreliner, and I think we only had one. Am I correct?
That's what I remember.
And it was
hey,
used
Neil?
For what purpose? What purpose was it used for?
It was bought for as a trainer. Somebody sold the board on the idea that could use it for multi-engine training, much cheaper, but it, I don't know that it ever did any multi-engine training. It was some special privileged executives' personal transportation.
Was that a Gulf team?
Bite my tongue if I'm wrong.
Hey, guys,
no,
I remember...
Go ahead, Don. No, Don, go ahead.
I remember seeing we had two Lockheed Jetstars for corporate use. I saw them on the ramp both in Freeport and Nassau. Well, they were probably, you know, VIP stuff. I don't know. We did
have two
of those.
Maybe I was talking about the wrong airplane. I'll have to admit
I think I was, too.
Failure here. I thought it was the Sabreliner, but it was not. It was the Jetstar. You're right, 100% right, Don.
It was the Lockheed Jetstar.
And do you recall what engines were on that Lockheed Jetstar?
No, there was one on each side. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah. That was
two on each side.
Yeah. I thought there were two, but maybe not. Maybe I'm playing the wrong airplane.
The Jetstar had four engines on it.
Yeah, that's and I was just calling it the wrong name.
Any Sabreliner made by Gulfstream?
No, I think the Sabreliner, I think, might be. I thought that was North American.
North American?
Jetstar was a Lockheed. That's right. Exactly right. Lockheed Jetstar. Thank you, Don. And let's see, any other information about engines or aircraft that Eastern owned a flock of them. I mean, we had, well, don't forget, we were in business in 1928, and we lasted for many, many years, and so it was always keeping up with the time. And I remember when I first came on board, Eddie Rickenbacker decided that we didn't need the jet airplanes. The turboprop airplanes was just fine. And so he ordered a bunch of Electras, and that turned out to be one of the mistakes at that time because everyone else was ordering jets. And when the jets came out, the 720s, other operators were using an American, some of the other airplane operators, and we were still using prop jets. And it took a long time to convince the old man that maybe the jet age had really here, and we needed to get into it. And when we did get into it, we got into it a big way with the Boeing 727. What a wonderful airplane that was.
Didn't they call the 188 Electra a bumblebee? Because when it was originally designed, they said it wasn't going to fly. And they added two more engines.
I hadn't heard that, but I did hear. And I knew, I mean, we all knew. Because we had some problems with the Electra. Anyone remember what problems we had with that airplane?
It developed a wing harmonic. Or the engine set up a harmonic in the wings.
And caused problems with the spars, right?
That's right.
Yep.
And so they had to beef up the spars. And from what I understand, I remember reading it cost Lockheed about $20 or $30 million to do that. And back in those days, $20 or $30 million was not pocket change like it is today. But that was a great deal of money that they had to spend to beef it up. And then the FAA, you remember that airplane was certified up to 400 knots, 450, I believe, knots. And then when we had our problems, mechanical problems, they turned it down to 350, somewhere around 350 knots, operational speed, maximum. And then they brought it down to about 200, a little over 200 knots. And finally they beefed up that spar, and they brought the airplane back up to its original specs. And we operated the airplane for many years on the shuttle. It was a great airplane for that purpose.
What
engines were on the DC-10? DC-10. Anyone can give me the engines on that airplane?
A DC-10.
I think they were GEs, but I don't recall the
designation. I think they were. I'm about to look it up, but I believe the DC-10 had the GE engines on it.
DC-10. Yes. We only had one that we leased.
That we leased that airplane, yeah.
From Alitalia.
From Alitalia?
We leased two from Alitalia. We flew them
to
Europe.
I had to learn how to taxi the thing.
Europe, South America,
they
Miami, London.
Miami, London, that's right.
And Miami, Buenos Aires.
And
Miami,
only...
L.A., Santiago.
Oh, that's right. They did go down to South America, too, with that, right, Don?
Yep. Buenos Aires and Santiago, Chile. Of course, they went over to London. We leased the two of them from Alitalia.
Okay, very good. Well, that's a real good discussion about Eastern airplanes.
Yeah, had an Aero Commander in Miami.
Hey, there you go. Thanks a lot, Frank. Aero Commander.
That's right.
And what purpose did we own an Aero Commander? Anyone remember?
ATP,
well, they came to the islands a lot. I know that.
Well,
it was
I was probably
a trainer
on one of them, Don, because I got my ATP on that airplane. That Aero Commander.
And, did you bring your sheet metal tools with you?
No, it was a funny thing. I used to own a flight school in Atlanta, and when we had the strike. We had one of the strikes, and I forgot which one it was. We were out of job for I don't know, a month or two. And I tried to figure out how was I going to make a living. And I had a school at the Peachtree to Care Airport in Atlanta. And someone said, well, why don't you call this guy here? He owns an Air Commander 500, I think it was called, Air Commander 500. And a prop airplane, reciprocating. And he says, this guy could probably use you as a pilot to fly up to Detroit and bring down parts from Detroit. And of course, Atlanta had the Ford plant, and they had, I think they had the Chrysler plant there too, or General Motors. And they wanted us to bring parts back. And so my partner, the late John Cornei, John was hired about the time I was, and we became real good friends and opened a flight school there in Atlanta. And we volunteered because we were out without a job for the duration of the strike. And the guy asked us, I remember his name, Larry Block, never forget that name. Larry asked us, have you ever flown an Aero Commander? And we said, yeah. And neither one of us had ever been in an Aero Commander. And so he said, okay, the keys are out there. Just ask Pat Epps for the keys to the Epps Flying Service. So we did exactly what he told us. And we were to go out and get three bounces and check ourselves out in the airplane. Neither one of us had the slightest idea of what an Aero Commander looked like, much less fly it. So we went out. Got the keys, got the engine started. They did have a checklist in there. Got the engine started, and we flew. Each one of us just did three bounces, and I think a little bit more than that. We took it over Stone Mountain and wherever, and we came back and called him. Yeah, we're ready to go. And so he said, okay, I got a run for you up to Detroit, Ypsilanti. And I think it was Ypsilanti. Is that in Detroit? I think Michigan.
Yeah,
Ypsilanti?
That's the one. MIIT.
Yeah,
we
ran up there and we got some parts that they had ordered. It was an emergency deal, and we came back and we got all the way up there and back, and here we were checking ourselves out, not knowing the airplane. And it was kind of fun. And then we didn't even have ATP ratings, or ATRs as they called it back in those days. So then when it came time for me to check out as captain with Eastern, they sent me through the Air Commander, and by golly, it was about the same airplane that we had flown. And so we got our rating, our ATR rating, that airplane. So that's my experience with Air Commander. Never flew one after Eastern gave me my rating.
Neil, I've never heard of a pilot lying about his experience to get to fly an airplane. Has anybody else ever heard of that?
Yeah, I think Lindbergh did. I think the Wright brothers did.
didn't you pick up a couple of soldiers and fly them from A to B and couldn't find the airport?
Yeah, I think that was Steve. I did do things like that.
I did that, yes.
Yeah, I know. I remember.
That was the plane that John O'Neill, the chief pilot in Miami, and Jack Shields flew to Nassau chasing the hijacker.
Oh, okay.
Was that an Aero Commander?
The Aero Commander.
That's right.
And the hijacker was formerly one of New York's finest.
That was his first attempt.
Yeah.
He tried a second time.
Well, what was his name, George?
That I'm not sure of. Let me...
Frank probably knows.
I got it someplace. You need your time. I can't remember it offhand.
Or the Hey Wewo.
Don, you're talking about visitations. I bet over in the islands where you worked, you had a lot of funny stuff going on with different airplanes coming in.
That hijacker was James Bennett.
Ring a bell, George.
What was his name? What was his name?
James Bennett.
I don't remember. I didn't know that.
Well,
did they give him residency over at Rikers Island?
No, I think he copped a plea, an insanity plea, and he got off, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, he's been bouncing around.
Good story there, George, for a new book.
Yeah, well, no comment.
By the way, any good news on your book?
No, nothing new on it. Same old stuff. I'm working on another one right now.
All right. Very good. Very good. Well, Jill, are you with us? No. So would you talk to us about the website,
Jill,
Dorothy?
Jill's not with us, but I'd be happy to fill in for Jill.
Thank you.
I'd like to tell the listeners and former and new Eastern employees about what they can now find on the EAL Radio Show website. Thanks to our webmaster, we now have a photo album of graduating classes. If anyone has a class picture of your graduating class, please send it to host@EALRadioshow.com. That's host@EALRadioshow.com. We have a few classes posted and many more waiting our webmaster putting them on the site. Please include any names that you can remember or simply put the year and the month of the graduation. We received one from a reservation class back in 1958. This will be a great resource for all of the Eastern people. We need your help to provide a great album of memories for all Eastern folks, so look through all your photos, and if you come across a picture taken of any graduation, make sure you send it to us at host@EALRadioshow.com. What's in your mind? We want to hear it. Any topic goes for the rest of the show. Who would you like to hear on our show as a guest?
That's a good question. And speaking of what Dorothy just talked about, class album, some of you may have joined the Internet's Classmates website. Has anyone been to Classmates? The idea is that they have researched all the class albums of all the high schools dating way back past yours and my dates of graduation, and they have it's classmates.com, and they have albums, so you can go in and see your album with your picture in your graduating class. As a matter of fact, the whole album is presented on that. And I'm not giving a plug for Classmates, but I got the idea that wouldn't it be nice that we had graduating classes showing up on our website. And so we have done that. We've started that now. And the first time I sent out an e-blast to all of our radio show members, all 900 of them now, and I got a real great response back from them, not only from flight attendants, but from maintenance now and also reservation, that took pictures of the graduating class, just like taking pictures of the high school graduating class. And they sent that on to me, and so I'm trying to put those in as they come in, and I'm having problems with some of them because they come in sideways, if you know what I'm talking about on the Internet. A picture coming in vertical. Instead of landscape, it's now turn left or turn right. And so I got to figure out how to turn it back so people don't have to turn their heads to see the people in that graduating class. And we're also getting pictures of the graduating class of the new Eastern Airlines. So we're going to eventually put their graduating class in as well. So we're dating back now. The earliest we've got for the flight attendants is 1955. Now, I don't recall, and Steve, maybe you can help me, or George or Frank, when you went with Eastern, I don't think we guys ever got pictures. We were too damn ugly to
I think you're right.
Picture of us. So we weren't you know, the smartly dressed, beautiful young ladies that appear on the flight attendants. But I've got some good, got one picture, a 1958 picture of a reservation class. And I think all of them were young ladies, and I think there were two guys in that class. So we're going to do that, and I think it's going to be very interesting, if especially since we, if we can get a number of classes to be on or in that website. And I encourage anyone that has a graduating class picture that sends it in, like Dorothy said, send it to host@EALradioshow.com. And if you can, label as many people. You probably have forgotten a few of them in that picture. But label as many as you can in that picture, and we'll put it right there in the album. So you'll go to the album, graduating class albums, that will be on the website and be able to look at different graduating classes. So it ought to be interesting.
Neil?
Hey, Frank, what was that hijacker's name again, you said?
Bennett.
Okay. I wasn't aware of his name.
Yeah. Frank is out there somewhere. He didn't respond. He's listening.
I had it on mute. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
His name was James Bennett, and he lived in Colmack, George.
Okay, thanks.
Neil,
all right.
When
yes,
you get ready to do the photos, I'd be happy to help you. I can tell you how to work it.
Oh, golly, Pete. I have been trying. I put it in Photoshop. I put it everywhere trying to rotate these pictures that come to me sideways.
I can do it very easily for you.
And I got one that appears now as my desktop picture. I used to have an Airbus A300 on my desktop and had all my applications along with it, but somehow or another I got an Eastern graduating class as now my desktop picture. I don't know how that ever came out. But that's okay.
I enjoy, save as.
But I enjoy looking at them every time I turn my computer on. There they are. But I can't get them into the program, into the website, because they were sideways. But they're perfectly
straight. I can tell you how to do it, Neil. I'll be happy to give you a call tomorrow.
Well, you and I will have a session on that one.
Okay.
Yeah, Dorothy also said, what topics would you like to hear us talk about? And we would like to hear from you. Yeah, I'd like to hear from you. Any topic, just name one, and we will mutilate it. We can do that. But we'll try to research it. And Frank's got one. Frank Segnor up in New York. He was involved in a hijacking, and I'd like to hear more about that. And that would be great to talk about that one, because Eastern had, a number of hijackings. Some were very successful, and there were a few that were not, that wound up like the incident out in Houston, Texas. A good friend of mine, Lee Hines, was a captain on that flight, and the agent boarding passengers was killed by the hijacker. So we did have some tragedies on some of our hijackings. Okay. Golly, Pete, I've run out of things to think about here or to talk about. Anybody else want to talk about anything? Hey, Vito, are you still with us?
Yeah, I am.
Good. Golly, it must be fascinating listening to all the stuff we're talking about.
It sure is. It's interesting about all the engines. It's very, very interesting. So
I thought it was. Yeah, I love engines.
I never realized there's so much thrust on them engines, thousands of pounds of engine thrust on them. So,
well, guess what?
Very interesting.
Vito,
listen. Pardon?
On those big engines now, on the 7.7, 7.8s, and A380s, and those big airplanes, they're up to, 90,000 pounds of thrust per engine?
That's correct.
90, They're the Trent engines. I think they're called Trent engines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And,
they're powerful. Wow. And you know, when Chuck talked about that 180 minutes ETOP, we call it ETOP, the extended operational range of a airplane that loses an engine and how long one engine can go. I think you said 180 minutes is what it checked out to be. And that's amazing that two engines for a while, they said you can't fly two engine airplanes across the Atlantic and the Pacific. You can't do it because of losing one engine. You've got to land as soon as possible. Well, these engines are remarkable. The efficiency, fuel efficiency of them is also. But they have the powers to sustain flight, but not, of course, at 40,000 feet or 41,000 feet. So when you lose an engine, you drop down to a lower optimum altitude for one engine operation. And these aircraft have got tremendous performances. So safety is built in. It's always nice to have four. You know,
yeah.
How unlucky can you be to lose three?
Especially if they're all turning.
Well, Steve Thompson lost all three, and they only had three engines on the airplane, right, Steve?
That's what I remember, Neil, yes.
I hear they had a pucker captain, though.
Those angels were really working hard.
That's in your book, too, I believe, Steve, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Very good. Okay. Steve, how about doing the honors of doing what this song tells us?
Well, Neil, that was a great landing. We had a great show tonight, folks. And Mr. Producer, another outstanding show. You know it's always fun when we talk about Eastern Airlines and the place that we worked. And now we can talk about the new Eastern Airlines. You know, we feel we've truly earned the title of the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. And it's because of you, our callers, listeners, guests, and hosts. We hope you'll enjoy us and you will join us February 1st as we broadcast our 252nd show, Traveling Abroad, our Traveling Aboard our Eastern EAL radio show, Boeing 737-800. Now, from all of us here, we say good night, Eastern.
Good night.
We love you, Eastern.
We love you, Eastern.
Good night.
Love you, Eastern.